Hendry.
And PhilHendryShow.com. Don't forget, on demand tomorrow morning is our video cast from the night show, as well as our podcast and our Phil Hendry Show podcast. And a Backstage Pass membership gets you almost 5,000 hours of archived great radio, as well as, you know, our video archive, our Los Angeles shows. And I also would like to, at this particular time, welcome into the fight, and I say this very seriously, welcome into the fight for the respect for our copyright, for material that radio people are beginning to own themselves. You know, I own my show, much of my show's material, and a lot of people on the air are beginning to own their own material, and they're protecting it by way of copyright and trademark, and we continue to have that copyright infringed a variety of different ways online, and we have to invoke our, you know, our rights legally by way of having takedown notices sent and sometimes suing people. And one of the people now that's jumping into the fight to protect his material is Steve Dahl in Chicago. He's a legendary broadcaster, longtime Chicago broadcaster, and one of the very earliest practitioners of I don't use this term shock jock. I think that's anybody that uses the term shock jock already marks themselves in my mind as an amateur. I don't consider them even broadcast professionals, anybody that says shock jock. To me, he was one of the first of the I call them entertainment talk hosts, personality talk hosts, you know, people that brought art to the talk radio, you know, format, as opposed to just being a very dry kind of, you know, host. Rush is another one, but, you know, Rush is not even, Rush came along after Steve Dahl. Steve Dahl was one of the first. So in any event, Steve Dahl is now protecting his material by way of copyright, and he's being assaulted in the same way that I was. And continue to be. And we continue to, you know, fight that fight. If you want to fight the good fight, there's the good fight. That's somebody who's making a living with their material. I make a living with this. It's not like I'm, and I'm not living the high life here, man. I'm just a working stiff, you know, trying to make a living with my work. This is stuff that I did. And we offer it to people by way of a subscription service, and people take advantage of it, and we respect them, and we respect their rights. And I don't steal from anybody. I'm not out there thieving my way to any great money. This is all my stuff. People that take our material, anybody, people that take Steve Dahl's material, people that take Howard Stern's material, I don't care who, anybody that willingly violates a copyright is a thief. Okay? You're just a thief. I'm sorry to have to tell you that, but there's no getting around it. And if that's okay with you, then you won't mind if we break into your house some night and steal what you've got.
Well, they're not breaking in.
They most certainly are. If it says that this is not to be publicly... I'm not talking about people that download material and share it among friends. That's legal. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a select few people. They know exactly what they're doing. They take the material and they file share it on a public site. What they're doing essentially is trying to devalue it. They're trying to damage people's businesses. When you take someone's material that is protected by a copyright and you publicly file share it, you're attempting to devalue that person's business. You don't give me this bull crap about how you're promoting it, because you're not, you know. I've heard that argument. I've had that discussion. I've been involved in that argument. And it is an absolutely unacceptable point of view. It's wrong about 900 different ways when you look at it. And at the end of the day, the guy that makes the decision on what to do with his own material is that guy, not some you know, internet you know, archivist, some self-described curator, someone who decides that they know better than the person that owns this stuff what to do with it. That happens all the time. So I saw where Steve Dahl is having a he's having this battle, and he had to have a fan, a well-meaning fan, I'm sure, who was taking his material and putting it on a website and giving it away for free. And Dahl had to do a takedown on this guy, and I'm sure that it got the guy really pissed off. And I don't understand these people. If you're really a fan, you would respect the wishes of the person that created that stuff. There's no difference between the guy and the material that he created. If you like that show and you like that material, then you would want to respect the wishes of that individual. If you don't, then you're a thief. and that's all there is to it, and you're okay with people stealing. Now, if you're all right with somebody coming into your house or taking your stuff, then, you know.
Every time you talk about this, though, people get upset.
No, people don't. Most people understand exactly what I'm talking about. Most people agree with me. The people who get upset are that little minority of, I don't know what you call them. They're just the denizens that creep along the underside of the internet that want to just ruin everything, you know, and want to, you know, devalue everything and steal everything and just, and that's fine. I know they're there and I, you know, we deal with them. But it's for the people listening out there so they know what it is we're up against. And so they also know that Steve Dahl is doing a battle this way. Phil Hendry is, and more and more and more and more people will be. Now, one of the things that has opened up the eyes of the average citizen, if you will, if you want to, I don't mean to say average citizen, but people that are not media people, is this whole Instagram thing and this whole Facebook fight.
What's that?
That's people saying, wait a second, Instagram, you don't own my pictures.
Oh, I remember that because people were afraid that Instagram was stealing.
No. People weren't afraid that Instagram was stealing. People were simply afraid that Instagram had made a, I guess what you would say, a sort of a mass or broad brush claim that everything that's on Instagram we own. And people automatically responded to that saying, no, wait a minute, you don't own my picture. I own my picture. So Instagram had to explain, they had to clarify that, no, we're not trying to steal anybody's picture. We're just trying to clarify terms of use. And no, you own your photographs. Now, the significance of that isn't what Instagram was up to. I'm not talking about that. The significance of it was the reaction of people that use Instagram. Suddenly, everybody recognizes what it is to have material, to share it online, and what it means when that material is usurped or otherwise co-opted and used by somebody else. People are really protective of the stuff they create, you know. So, and I think people who reacted that way to the Instagram thing understand where Phil Hendry's coming from, where Steve Dahl may be coming from, where a lot of other people are coming from. We say, I don't mind you listening to my material. I don't mind you enjoying it. I don't even mind you, and yes, we do charge a price because we're people that people will, and thank God, people will pay a subscription fee to hear our material. But the fight is the same. You know, if you access it legally, we're very happy to share it with you. But if you take it and you publicly file share it, that violates the terms of service. That violates why we put it online in the first place. It's a violation of the law if you don't take it down after we ask you to, and a lot of these people do not.
Well, you can sue them, though.
Yes, you can sue them. And when you threaten them with a lawsuit, that's eventually when they start to take this stuff down. Now the average person using Instagram or Facebook, now they understand this. And there's a lot of people who do all kinds of really silly mental gymnastics and semantic twists and turns to win their argument, like the guy that I talked to on Reddit who said, Mr. Hendry, I don't see why you have a problem with sharing your stuff. I said, well, I do because it's how I make my living. If I had more than one thing that I made, I'd be happy to give away the other things. I still have the original. And then some guy jumped on and said, don't you understand that that's the whole reason why, for instance, bands, people that publish music, they have the original tapes. Yeah, but all of the copies of that music they've made, all of that stuff hasn't been paid for. It's being publicly file shared. It was the whole Napster thing. That's what Metallica was talking about. And nobody liked Metallica.
Well, you know, when you have people that are used to this.
Yeah, if you're used to going to get Metallica and now all of a sudden they're going, hey, you got to pay for it. That's a jip.
What do you mean that's a jip? What is that supposed to be? What Metallica said was, you know, we didn't know that this is going on. We didn't make this stuff available for free. It was being publicly file shared, so nobody's buying our records. So what the hell are we working for free? You know, what is this about? Napster. We have an album. And Napster, yes, and then people put it here and then everybody can access it. Well, that's not kind of the way the ball game's played, man. I mean, we cut an album and people buy it, and I'm sure that they share the album with their friends, and you play the song with a friend, or you know. But when you make that publicly available for free, that's the problem.
So that's what the Napster thing was.
That's essentially what the Napster thing was. Metallica and Phil Henry and anybody in between is not saying, you may not share my stuff. I didn't say that. You can download my stuff and share with a friend. What you can't do is take it and put it on a public file sharing site and say, here, anybody, even though I don't know you, here, have fun with this. It's Phil's stuff. And look at this. It's free. And we, you know.
Well, nobody goes we.
Yeah, you're right, bud. Nobody goes we.
Billy might.
Yeah, they might, yeah.
But I don't think they would.
Okay, fine. They may say we and they may not. Let's take a break. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Whee!
Truth is our bitch. That's Phil Henry Show.
So I think we is the truth.
Whee!
All right, welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. We've had some notable passings. Ed Koch, the mayor of New York, former mayor of New York, Ed Koch has died. He was, I think he was in his 90s, 88. He died of congestive heart failure.
Now, who's he?
He was a former mayor of New York.
Is that Giuliani?
No.
It's Ed Koch. Why would it be Giuliani?
Well, you said a mayor of New York.
They had more than one mayor, man, okay?
The what?
They had more than one mayor. Ed Koch was the mayor. He was the mayor of New York from the late 1970s, from 78 to 1989. Three terms, 12 years.
No, wait. That's 11.
But just trust me. 12 years, yes, I know it looks like 11. He helped New York climb out of its financial crisis through tough fiscal policies and razor-sharp budget cuts, and subway service improved enormously. To much of the rest of America, the bald, paunchy Koch became the embodiment of the brash, irrepressible New Yorker. He was quick with a quip or a put-down, and when he got excited or indignant, which was often, his voice became high-pitched. He dismissed his critics as wackos, feuded with Donald Trump, called him Piggy, and a fellow former mayor Rudolph Giuliani, a nasty man, lambasted the Reverend Jesse Jackson and once reduced the head of the city council to tears. You punch me, I punch back, Koch once observed. I do not believe it's good for one's self-respect to be a punching bag. So I'd rather you be the punching bag.
Yeah, well, that's about as confusing as...
Well, take it easy, Margaret. He was a Democrat, but he was, kind of an old-school Democrat.
What do you mean, take it easy, Margaret? He was a Democrat. Does that make him a progressive? That's what I am, a progressive. This idea of Democrat, 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 Republican, I don't care about that. I am a progressive. All right?
Yeah, sure. Don't look at me like you're about ready to stick a knife in me.
Just watch it.
Hey!
Hey, watch it. Tell him watch it.
Back off. You guys start... Don't step to me like that.
Margaret, you can't look at a guy and go, hey... You know.
Yeah, look, Martin, look like you're going to step to him.
Don't step to me.
Whatever. Or, as he put it in Mayor, his best-selling autobiography, I'm not the type to get ulcers, I give them.
Yeah.
I like that. Koch's favorite moment as mayor, fittingly, involved yelling during a transit strike that brought the subways and buses to a halt in the year of our Lord, 1980. He strode down to the Brooklyn Bridge to boost the spirit of commuters who had to walk to work. I began to yell, walk over the bridge, walk over the bridge. We're not going to let those bastards bring us to our knees. And people began to applaud, he recalled. New Yorkers, though, eventually tired of Mayor Koch. Homelessness and AIDS soared in the 1980s, and critics charged that City Hall's response was too little too late. Koch's latter years in office were also marked by scandals involving those around him and rising racial tension. In 1989, he lost a bid for a fourth term to David Dinkins, who became the city's first black mayor. On Friday, Dinkins called Koch a feisty guy who'd tell you what he thinks. Ed was a guy to whom I could turn to if I wanted a straight answer, he told Fox 5.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, what he says is that I want a straight answer. Well, you lousy, stinking, N-word. Don't say that.
I didn't say it. Said N-word.
He never called David Dinkins the N-word.
Well, you don't know. I mean when they were relaxing.
Probably when they were relaxing, yeah. What do you mean when they were relaxing?
Yeah, what does that mean?
They're probably having a cocktail or something.
Don't mayors get together and have cocktails together or something like that? That's a very good point, bud. I like that point. Don't they get...
Thank you, Ms. Gray.
You're welcome. Don't they get together and have cocktails?
I don't know.
Well, what do you mean you don't know?
They'll probably get together and have a cocktail.
Yeah.
Okay, then they get together and they have cocktails. What about it?
Well, that's when they let their hair down. And that's when Mayor Koch probably said to this Dinkins, well, you know, you cheap-crawling N-word.
Oh, that's right, Margaret. When they're just sitting around and relaxing.
Well, I don't know.
Ms. Gray, I can assure you that did not happen.
All right, Robert. Well, I'm waiting for you to weigh in since you're the only black person that we have here.
Yes. And, Margaret, we didn't really need Robert to weigh in on that because I could tell you that.
I don't know that you could say that for sure.
Yeah, Mr. Aaron, you're not really... You know?
Listen, no guy is going to sit around with another guy, one of them white, one of them black, having cocktails and relaxing, and say to the guy, why, you crawling N-word, sure. That's going to be a fist fight, okay?
If they're friends.
Who's friends with a guy like that? That's the whole point. Now, just, you know, back off, okay? You guy, I'm going to tell you something. No, Robert, you know, white people.
Hey, I've been saying that for years.
Sometimes I wonder. I mean, I'm white, too, but I ain't that dumb. I mean, I may be white, but I'm not that stupid. All right, on Friday, Dinkins called Koch a feisty guy who would tell you what he thinks. Ed was a guy to whom I could turn to if I wanted a straight answer. And from that, you get that they sat around and relaxed and called each other names, huh?
Yeah, he probably called... Mayor Dinkins probably called Koch. What a heeb.
Will you shut up, man?
Oh, my God. How dare you?
Oh, yeah, but you like to say the N-word.
I didn't say N-word.
No, that's a good point. She didn't say N-word. Bud said the heeb.
He got to say it.
Oh, he's trying. He's quoting you. Don't you ever do that again.
I didn't do anything.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Don't you ever use that word again.
I didn't say anything.
Anyway, Mayor Michael Bloomberg saluted Koch as a civic savior for our city in desperate times, saying the whole city was crumbling. Boy, I'll tell you, New York back then, I remember when the mayor at the time, Abe, I forget his name now.
Not Abe Lincoln.
Why would it be Abe Lincoln?
You said Abe. Are you talking about...
Talking about the president?
I just said the mayor of New York before Koch. I didn't say that. The mayor of New York... was Abe something, and he went to Washington and asked for federal aid for New York City, and they turned him down. I think they turned him down. But he did make a very good statement. He made a statement, that I'll never forget the hearings for that, because he said, I'm simply asking for people what the government is willing to do for corporations.
That is a very profound statement.
Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't do him any good.
I don't know. I really don't know what that gentleman's success was, but I thought it was I thought he was right. Nonetheless, I'm sure that what he got was what we gave Ford. You know, here's the thing: if you say something like that, which at the time I thought was a very true statement, he said, "I'm asking for people what the government does for corporations," but. There's another side to that. The corporation is held accountable for the financial success. Those guys that went to Washington in their jets were quickly brought to heel. I mean, they were publicly lambasted and humiliated for those jets, and they wound up, I don't know what the hell they did, taking the train or flying commercial or something. They come to Washington, D.C., and they were called on the carpet. You clowns, you guys couldn't run a freaking lemonade stand. What the hell makes you think we're going to give you money for your car companies, right? And I suppose if you're going to tell... guys that run corporations that, you're going to have to tell a mayor that.
Well, they told that mayor that long before they told those corporation guys any of the similar things.
Well, that's true.
Yes, I mean, they got around to telling the corporation guys that in 2000, whatever it was.
In 2001.
No, it wasn't 2000. It was 2004.
No, it was right when Obama got elected, 2008.
Yes, 2008. But they didn't say that to the mayor, oh, I forget.
Yeah, I do too. You guys took so long over that freaking... All right, in any event, so former President Bill Clinton and former Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton remembered Koch as a fierce advocate for his city and a friend whose convictions ran deep. The Clintons recalled Koch as a man with a personality big enough to match the nation's largest city. They call him a leader who still... Oh, I can't read this. Anyway, you get the general idea. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show. One other major personality has passed on, and we'll tell you about him. And the son of a very wealthy man is going to prison, and other really cool stuff. World famous Phil Henry Show.
Mayor Kot, right?
That's the guy that just died.
Well, who's Barney the dog?
That's another guy that died. You ain't talked about it.
Phil Henry. This is the world famous Phil Henry Show.
What were you doing there?
Just messing with the camera. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show and online at philhenryshow.com. So, yeah, New York, in my opinion, is a much better city today than it was back then. Abe Beame. Thank you, Dan Northcraft. That was the name of the mayor back then.
Abe Beame.
Yeah, not Bean, Beame.
How are you spelling that?
B-E-A-M as in Mary E.
That's not Bean, that's Beame.
Beame.
Not Bean. Why did I spell it out for you?
Oh, you said N as in Mary.
I didn't say N as in Mary. I said M as in Mary.
I thought I heard different, too.
Right, what are you guys doing?
Writing it down. You give it to me again.
I'm going to give it to you one more time, and then this right hand's going to start to talk.
Oh, I didn't know what you said.
Bud, you knew full well. B-E-A-M as in Mary, E.
Beame.
Beame, yes.
That's what I thought he said, man. I didn't say Bean.
This jackass said Bean.
Well,
don't do it. Don't do it, man. Don't do it, bud. Save yourself.
I didn't say nothing other than when you said Abe and Ms. Gray said Lincoln, I thought you were talking about the president of America.
Yeah, even though I was talking about New York City?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, this is now you know that when I was talking about New York City, it would be highly unlikely that I would be talking about Abraham Lincoln. I'm talking about New York City, the mayor, Abe Beame. Now, the city back then of New York, you know, as I was just saying to our good friend, Mr. Northcraft, you know, some people have nostalgia for New York back in the day when Times Square was full of junkies and hookers and this kind of underground so-called bohemian. I wouldn't call that bohemian. That's just, you know, that's just straight up criminal life, you know, thug life. It's the scoff law. Some people say that they miss that New York. That's great. Those cannot possibly be people that were working and living in New York at that time, or at least having to work in New York at that time. I don't think anybody that had to deal with that misses it. I think that's a lot of out-of-town people who like to come off like they're New Yorkers. Oh, yeah, New York. I remember it. They had such colorful characters.
Well, I agree. I think those are people that are from, you know, from Los Angeles or San Francisco.
Oh, here we go with the pronunciation.
Yes, here we go. San Francisco.
Okay, is that the French?
Yes.
Well, so point being that New York is a way better city now. Now, if I say to somebody, I like New York today, I like the idea that when we were in New York and Chris and Catherine were 11 and 9 years of age, little kids, and it was 11 o'clock at night, and they said, we want to go get some pizza, and they went out into Times Square of New York to get pizza, and you didn't worry about them. You don't worry about them. Because that's what Times Square is today. You can send a little, your kids can go out there on a Saturday night or a Friday night and get pizza at 11 o'clock at night, and you don't worry about the safety of those children. Now, am I supposed to say that's not as good as the way New York used to be? Maybe, you know, if I was only thinking of myself and I thought it was so colorful that they have junkies and drug dealers and people getting mugged and, yes, occasionally raped, if I think that that's colorful and that's the real New York, I got to tell you, you know, there was a time when New York City was not a cesspool like it was in the 70s.
Yeah, it's back when they had only Dutch people.
Exactly. I mean, you can, you know, there's always, when you say that, well, New York was really a fantastic city, the way it used to be. What are you talking about? When the Dutch were planting peach trees?
Well, Phil, that wasn't a city. That was called New Amsterdam.
Yeah, technically that wasn't New York.
So what are you trying to tell me? When they started calling it New York, suddenly went to hell in a handcart?
That's probably when they started to get pimps and pushers.
when they started to call it New York, sometime around whenever the hell it was, the 18th century, was it?
Well, I don't know, Phil, but I think that the pimp and the pusher, while a negative personality type, there's no question, but your pimp and your pusher give New York a colorful reputation for this bawdy, rapscallion, scofflaw, as you mentioned, personality that if you think of Guys and Dolls, oh my God, Guys and Dolls, that's the New York with the bawdy reputation, you see?
Guys and Dolls is one thing. Rape is something else.
I didn't say rape, and you don't know.
How do you know? Didn't they get raped in Guys and Dolls?
Wasn't there a rape in Guys and Dolls?
No, not that I know of, no.
Bill, rape and Guys, what's Guys and Dolls?
Guys and Dolls was a Damon Runyon-esque. You know who Damon Runyon-esque was?
It's not Damon Runyon-esque. It was Damon Runyon. Yes, I do.
I wasn't talking to you. I'm asking Robert. Do you know who he was?
No, I don't.
Damon Runyon was who was he, Phil? I don't want to get bogged down.
Damon Runyon was a writer, a famous sports writer at the time in New York, had a very colorful kind of writing style. It develops that, and he had a lot of New York ways of saying things, and Guys and Dolls, I think, was written by him or based on him.
Well, what's Guy and Doll about? Yeah, what was it?
It was a musical. It was a very popular musical that had, it was about those guys. Got cats that were gamblers and guys that hung around the bars and the saloons and played dice and, you know, and were always hustling and always at the track betting. And it's a very, you know, that was what it was.
And the song that I, Luck Be a Lady, tonight, 2, 3, 4, because I remember I was in the chorus line for that when it played the Avante Theater, which at that time was on 34th, and then it moved up to 41st, and then moved back down to 2D2, or not, I always call it 2D2.
22nd?
22nd, but in those days, 22nd wasn't 22nd, it was Herbivore. Am I right about that, or am I thinking of Kansas City? Where is Herbivore?
I don't know where Herbivore is. I thought that was something that eats only...
Don't piss me off, Phil. Where is Herbivore Avenue?
I don't know where Herbivore Avenue is. I thought it was something that...
All right, before I assault you with the knitting needle that I have in my purse, I'm getting up...
Margaret, don't talk that way.
I'm leaving.
Great.
Where is Herbivore?
No, I'm going to sit back down. I just want to... I want to ask this, but don't look at me like I'm a pervert.
I'm not looking at it that way. I'm scared of you when you said you got a knitting needle in there.
Oh, my God. When you said I've got a knitting needle in there, you looked between my legs.
Margaret, will you grow the hell up? No, I didn't. My eyes were casting around in fear.
You went, do you have a knitting needle in there? And your eyes went right down.
No, they didn't.
But what are you talking about Herbivore?
22nd Street in New York used to be called Herbal Lane or something like that. Anyway, there was a theater there called the Avante. The Avante had moved up from 6th Street. Not 6th, I'm sorry. From 6th Avenue, moved over to Broadway, then it moved uptown, and then it moved to, I think...
How many times did this theater move?
A couple of, I don't know, Phil, but I was in Guys and Dolls, and I was in the chorus, and I remember that time, it was Guy Van Dressler, that's who it was. He was starring with Vanessa Okren. And, oh, my God, we ran for weeks. We ran for, I don't know how many times we ran.
Where are you running from?
Are you trying to be funny?
Hey, watch it.
What do you mean, what was I running from?
You said you ran.
It's what they call plays, okay?
But I remember, count it, it's 2, 3, and then we did heel, click, then the butt goes up in the air, we wiggle our butt, and then luck be a lady tonight, 2, 3, and... Do 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 tonight, and then we twirl. Do 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 do. Luck be a lady tonight, and then I would fall. I would roll. We did a somersault, 3 rolls, another somersault,
another spring roll,
another spring.
All right, hey.
I'll kill it.
Get out! Get away from me!
Let him just go. Let him go.
What you talking about that?
I don't know.
Ow!
Yeah. God, I did it.
Margaret, one of these days he's going to charge you with assault.
No, I'll charge him with... What do you mean he's charging me with assault?
You chased him out of the room, didn't you?
When I said we did a somersault and a roll, and he says spring roll, that is provocative.
Low fat?
I beg your pardon?
Low fat?
Spring rolls are not low fat. They're deep...
Hey!
Tell me what? How to cook?
I don't understand. So anyway, that's very nice about the whole... You know, we were talking about New York and how New York, in my opinion, is a much better place today than it was in those days. But then, you know, every city goes through... And as I was saying to Dan, it would be like me pining away for the old days of L.A. You know, boy, I'll tell you, L.A. today, man, it wasn't like it was when Manson was running around carving people up, but...
Yeah, well, that's Manson, man. I mean, you ain't going to go over there, are you?
I don't know, man. If I lived in that neighborhood, I'm going to sit there and say, boy, I'll tell you, you know, back in the day, Benedict Canyon was a lot of laughs, man, hearing people screaming and getting knifed. Now it's boring.
What about in 10?
What?
What about in 10? You ever see 10?
Yeah, I saw 10. What about it?
The Dudley Moore had a house. I think he had a house in Benedict Canyon. And anyway, he had a telescope. And he looked at a telescope, looking across, and saw, man, all everybody's nude. That's the one thing he was able to verify. Everyone nude.
That was the one thing he was able to verify, huh?
Yeah, look at the telescope.
I remember in 10 when he looked in the telescope and everybody was nude. What's that got to do with Benedict Canyon?
That was Benedict Canyon.
Well, I don't know if it was or not, but if it was Benedict Canyon...
That like a good place to live.
Yeah, a good place to live when Dudley Moore had his telescope, not a good place to live when Manson was crawling around there. All this nostalgia, man. You know, the thing about nostalgia, it's very selective. I love that. People want to go back to this period and that period and this. Oh, God, it was so great. Yeah, huh? Sure it was, man. If you go back and take a good, long, hard look at the actual era that you're talking about, I guarantee you, you want nothing to do with it. You want nothing to do with it because the past, folks, is not as good as the present. In America. In America. Maybe in Nazi Germany or wherever the hell. In America, the past is never as good as the present or the future. That's why we love our country. Or at least I love my country. Because I know this country, the future, I mean, I'll tell you what, as good as things may be now, and I know that people are all upset because we're in a recession, yada, 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 yada. Hey, like I said, man, there was a time in this country when recession meant people were starving to death, laying in the street dead, you know. But in this country, man, the future is way better than the past. Thank you.
Sound like you're going to go to sleep.
I'm going to sleep in about 20 minutes. We'll take a break. Final segment of the Phil Henry Show coming up. Don't forget, tomorrow we have our podcast as well as our on-demand video of tonight's show. Check it out at philhenryshow.com. Get a backstage pass.
Truth yeah. is our bitch.
Yeah.
The Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. So the weekend is ahead. Let me just give you a heads up. Be checking our website because once we are able to establish our live streaming, we're going to have Sunday football with Phil. Join us Pacific time for the start of the Super Bowl. I will be here in studio. We'll have the Super Bowl on. We will have the shot glasses lined up. We will be imbibing. We will be doing our color commentary as only we can. Robert, you'll be here, right?
Yeah, I'm going to be doing a color commentary and Bud Dickman, too. I want to do it, too.
What about you, Margaret?
Well, I don't know a thing about football. If you want me here, I'll be here, but I'm going to be very honest. I'm going to be brutally honest about what I see.
Well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
What do you mean, what does it mean?
Are you going to ruin our experience? This is a joyous, fun thing.
Oh, sure. Sure, it's a joyous and fun thing. Until a man gets his neck snapped and is not mobile for the rest of his life. Until he's wheeling around in an iron lung and they go, oh, there goes Joe Blow. He was a great wide tackle or something for the Detroit Bears.
Not the Detroit Bears. Yeah, the Detroit Lions.
I don't care.
Well, that's a really marvelous way of looking at things. Thank you very much for uplifting us.
And Phil, I'm here to tell some truth. You want to watch a football game, you have yourself a real good time. But I'll tell you, I'm not going to sit around and watch some man land on his head. And so he walks off the field and he sits down and they say to him, are you all right? And suddenly he sounds mush mouth like he's a caveman.
What are you talking about?
You know what I'm talking about.
Margaret, I know that the concussion thing is a great concern to a great many people.
Well, it's a concern to a mother whose young son is now talking about wanting to play football.
Of course he's going to talk about that. Of course he is.
Don't you think it scares me?
Well, no, it shouldn't scare you. It shouldn't scare you. Talk to the coaches. Talk to the guys that are going to be running the team. Take a look at the equipment. I know that Jason J. Delmonico goes to a good school, doesn't he?
Yes, he most certainly does go to a good school. They have the money for the equipment.
Well, then don't worry about it. They're going to have good equipment, good coaches, and they start the kids out very slow. Let me tell you something. They don't start kids out with the big, you know, hey, throwing the ball 50 yards, this, that. These kids start slow. They start very basic. They learn how to tackle. They learn how to block. They, you know, I would not worry if I were you.
Yeah, it's easy for you to say, Phil, until your son comes off a football field and starts talking like Lou Ferrigno.
Well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know what it means.
Is he deaf?
No, I mean the concussion has caused your son to start talking like Lou Ferrigno.
So you mean so he's got a concussion going, duh, duh, duh.
Yes. Oh, they're laughing now.
Well, I mean, Ms. Gray, Lou Ferrigno, I can understand him.
Oh, yeah. What if your son came off the field after getting hit in the head and he started talking like Debbie Daly?
I can't remember. Debbie Daly is, she's hearing impaired, all right?
Yes.
So you're saying that my son would be deaf?
Are you listening? Are you listening to me, Phil? I'm saying...
You're saying that Debbie Daly, if he talked like Debbie Daly, meaning that... Get Debbie Daly on the phone. Is she home?
I don't know. What makes you think I'd know? I thought you were, like, all in love with her and stuff. I'm not in love with Debbie Daly. Not anymore. I've got a girlfriend now.
Oh, not anymore?
Where do you think she is?
I don't know. Go to the Colette bar she hangs out in.
Debbie Daly doesn't hang out in a bar, for God's sake. She's a broadcaster, and she's got a show to do tomorrow morning. And I can tell you that...
You got her on the line.
Debbie.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, good, Debbie. Where are you? You're having a taste?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we just wanted to talk to you for a minute for something that we're talking about something. So, how you doing? And you're in the bar and you're having a taste. What are you drinking?
Yeah, Debbie. That's the White Russian. You got yourself some milk in there. You got, vodka.
You're having a White Russian.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody there with you? Millie and Tony, and Tony's over playing pinball, huh? They still got a pinball on that joint? Where are you? You're over at Scroogey's, and you're going over to Blue later on. Where? What street's that on?
What, are you reading a book?
No, I'm not writing a book. What street's it on? Why don't I come over, hang out, and take a videotape? It lasts longer. That's an upgrade of the old joke, huh? No, I don't have anything more.
Well,
anyway.
So, do you want your son coming off a football field and sounding like that?
No, I don't, and I don't think he will.
A concussion will cause that.
That's not why she talks that way.
I know why she talks that way. I won't have Jason J. Delmonico coming off a football field and going...
But what's he going to do that for?
Oh, my God, if I've got to repeat myself one more time, I'm going to get violent.
A concussion, Bud. Margaret's afraid that her son will get a concussion. Like a lot of people are getting concussions in football. Have you been hearing the stories?
Yeah, I've been hearing the stories. I've been following football for a long time all about it. And I know everything there is. The guys get concussions? Okay, easy come, easy go. It's a tough, violent game. Football. You're going to get a concussion? A lot of stuff. A busted leg, a busted skull, your jaw gets ripped off and shoved in your eye socket, and all this stuff.
All right, we get it, okay?
Yeah, it is. It's a violent game, Miss Gray, a violent, tough game. And if your son Jason J. Delmonico will come off a football field...
Worse yet, what if he sounded like you, Robert?
Well, what do you mean, what if he sounded like me?
If my son comes off of that football field, Phil, and I go, how are you, darling? And he goes, yee-yee-yee-yee. My God, I'll sue you.
I don't think he will. I think he's going to be fine. I really do. World famous Phil Henry Show. So, Sunday, we are on schedule to have here on PhilHenryShow.com, to have on our video cast, at least, on Sunday. We're on schedule to have, as Margaret would say, Sunday Football with Phil. So join us for that on Sunday at PhilHenryShow.com. The Phil Henry Show is produced by our good friend Dan Northcraft. And what happened to the DDR, man? By our good friend Dan Northcraft and Phil Henry. And, of course, join us online at PhilHenryShow.com for all of those marvelous things I was talking about, the backstage pass,
so on and so forth.
Until Monday at 10 Pacific time, this is Phil Henry saying, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Henry.